The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Jeremy Hunt is the chairman of Veterans on Duty. Jimmy Byrne is a member of the advisory board. These are two guys with military backgrounds who have their thumb on the pulse of all things military. We're going to talk to them today about everything from TikTok to this proposed port into Gaza. Lots going on, and these two guys have it covered. We've had them on before. You may have seen them with us in the past. This time, we recorded this the day after the State of the Union address, so you will hear references to some of the things the president said in that State of the Union, but we're holding off on releasing this for a few days, so it may seem dated, but we spoke to them on that Friday, and they have a lot to say. And one of the main topics, TikTok. What happens if it goes away? All of that is coming up next.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya Podcast.
Jeremy and Jimmy, it's good to have you guys back on the show. And there's a lot of timely stuff to discuss, which is why I reached out. I want to start with this port to Gaza, this pier to the shore in order to bring humanitarian supplies. The idea is noble. I guess airdrops haven't worked as well as everyone expected. But Jeremy, what do you think? It seems to me this could put people in some danger.
Yeah, I think your intuition is exactly right. I mean, well, first thing to remember is that Secretary Gates got it right. President Biden has been wrong on just about every single foreign policy idea over the last several decades. I mean, and this is no different. The idea that in the midst of incredible danger that our troops are in right now. I mean, we've seen over 170 attacks on American troops in the Middle East since October 7th of last year. And so since all these different attacks, now we have our commander in chief pushing troops further into harm's way right there on the coast of Gaza, trusting somehow that these terrorists, an organization, Hamas, funded by Iran, and Hamas is an organization that is dedicated to destroying not only Israel, but also the United States, yeah. And to put our soldiers right there and Hamas controlled territory is a disaster. And so, you know, and he's obviously, you know, trying to placate to, you know, some of his base, but this is incredibly dangerous. I think it's something that that should not happen at all. What we should be doing is supporting our allies, giving Israel the funding that they need to continue to defeat Hamas, making sure we stand with them and give them the space to do what they need to do to destroy Hamas, and then all that we can do to make sure that we take care of the, you know, the serious issues in the region.
Jimmy, let's play this out for a second. Let's say that they build this port. American troops go in there to deliver the goods, and they are attacked and fired upon and potentially killed. If that were to happen, how do you see that just exacerbating this scenario? I can't imagine what the American response would need to be.
Well, yeah, I think, first of all, it would make it incredibly worse. I actually want to back up for one second because there is one thing I thought was interesting that came out of the State of the Union address last night. You know, President Biden was trying to say that, you know, there weren't going to be any American troops on the ground in Gaza. And maybe he's trying to say that, oh, they're not going to be, you know, in Rafah, the area that Israel is currently, you know, operating around. But the point is that if he's building a pier in Gaza that's not currently there, and he's doing it with U.S. resources, I don't know how he can say that there's not going to be U.S. sailors, service members on the ground there in harm's way, because they will be the ones that are going to have to put it there. And, oh, by the way, the ones that are going to have to run security in that area to protect whoever's building the port itself. So this is sort of, I was surprised to hear him say that last night, because, I mean, I think we're going to be able to see this with our own eyes as this pier is being built, or if it does get built, is that we're going to have service members on the ground in harm's way, as Jeremy was saying. And, you know, if, you know, God forbid, something does happen and we lose, you know, soldiers or sailors, service members there in Gaza, I mean, the backlash is going to be crazy, not just here in the United States politically for the president, because it's going to have these sort of reminiscences of what happened in Afghanistan.
Exactly.
We lost, you know, those service members there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to have ramifications for families. And then it's also, you know, potentially going to bring on a response from the United States if they have to go in there and do something to try to keep these Hamas fighters away from that area and keep it secure. And so, you know, my concern there would be that it would end up, you know, potentially spiraling where we may see the administration create another gaffe like they did after those Marines were killed, where they, you know, bombed a family that was trying to make it to the Kabul airport, thinking that, you know, they were some Taliban fighters or whoever it was. And it exacerbated that situation, you know, geopolitically for the United States as well, as they were trying to, you know, show some sort of ham-handed response to what had happened. And so, you know, that would be my main concern there is, you know, what that initial backlash would be like when we have to go back and try and figure out who did this and strike back at them. But also, you know, the ramifications for the families and of the service members if they were to get injured or killed, you know, which unfortunately we've seen some of that happening in the Middle East in the last couple months anyway, from these drone strikes and everything else that's happened.
Yeah. Jeremy, the region is so dangerous. And
yeah.
What do you think the odds are that this actually happens? As you said, this proposal placates his base, right? The people who are saying ceasefire and all the rest. But what about the rest of the world? How will they see this? And what would this result in?
I mean, I think it first and foremost, I think it kind of confirms what they already think about the United States under President Biden's leadership, which is that we are projecting American weakness, not American strength abroad. And that has been Joe Biden's story since he took office, since he decided to try to suck up to Iran these last few years. And we've seen how that has just been a disaster all around. And but you know, unfortunately, you know, at this time, we need a Congress that will be able to come together, that it's functional, that's able to kind of step in and say, no, Mr. President, this is way beyond, you know, what we're going to authorize. But as many of us are not surprised to hear, our Congress is not one that is particularly functional or known for getting things done. And so, you know, it looks like one of those situations where President Biden, as commander in chief, you know, now he's already kind of given that, especially as he's, you know, spoken to the world last night at the State of the Union. I mean, he's going to be able to go ahead and send these troops there. And I think it's incredibly dangerous. And I hope that the defense officials will step up and say, look, you know, Mr. President, this is, we do not advise this, but we need people to really consider the implications and the long-term effects of this. It's also a slap in the face to Israel. I mean, we're going to send, I mean, here we have hostages that are still being held by Hamas, six of which are Americans. And we don't see any kind of military operation to go rescue those hostages or any type of we haven't heard anything about what he's doing to get those hostages out or anything like that. And even the soldiers in the Middle East that have been attacked in different areas in the Middle East, you know, they've been very kind of a measured, you know, very kind of soft response. We've been kind of pussyfooting around the whole issue. But when it comes to, you know, making sure we help Hamas control territory, well, now, you know, we're sending sailors there to get the job done. I mean, that just, I think the messaging there is totally backwards. And our enemies are taking note.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Well, you speak of Congress and their inability to come together on certain things. Now, a congressional House committee did vote 50-0 on this bill about TikTok. Jimmy, let's get into this because I don't care how many tweeners, how many kids call Congress. They don't understand TikTok is a national security threat. I think it's already done so much damage socially and,
yes.
and in some way, and in other ways as well. So this committee votes, look, ByteDance, you either sell it to an American entity or you're banned. It seems pretty simple, and there's a lot of pushback. Where do you think this goes?
Well, my hope of where it goes is that it ends up being, you know, that we end up with either a divestiture of TikTok from ByteDance and any other foreign, you know, entities, or we end up with TikTok being banned. You know, if you want to see how dangerous TikTok is, or how much power it wields, look at what happened yesterday before the committee vote. All of these congresspeople were getting thousands of phone calls, and there's now starting to be messages circling around on X, formerly Twitter, about messages they were receiving from TikTok on their phones, directed and geolocated to where these users' cell phones were, to where their representatives located, so that they could, you know, figure out, okay, who is living in this particular district? Okay, call this congressperson and flood their offices and make sure that you tell them not to vote for this. I mean, if you want to just see a great example, I was actually shocked they did this yesterday, because it's a great example of exactly why we're concerned about this. They were able to target individual users to get them to call Congress, and they were successful in doing so. I was glad to see that the committee voted unanimously for this, despite the pressure that's coming. It still has a long way to go, though. It has to make it through a floor vote and through, you know, and then obviously go over to the Senate and get approved there. But, you know, Americans need to make no mistakes about this. And I understand, you know, everybody likes to go on TikTok and watch, you know, 8-second videos of their cat or whatever it is. Okay. But the larger issue here is that this is a massive national security threat. Okay. We have an app that is partially owned by a Chinese company, which is partially owned by the Chinese Communist Party. They actually, it's been confirmed, they have a stake in that company.
Yeah.
And there's a national security law in China, which hopefully most people know about, that says that if the Chinese government, the Chinese Communist Party, asks TikTok or ByteDance to do something, whether it's hand over data or spy on folks, whatever it is, even take over phones, which is something that FBI Director Christopher Wray just testified to a couple weeks ago in Congress. He said that there's a danger that TikTok could, you know, be forced by the Chinese Communist Party to take over software on people's phones. And that's one of the reasons it got banned on government devices, you know, just in the last year or so. And so, you know, people need to understand, like, especially going into an election year, as good as China is at influence operations and all of that stuff, you know, the ability for them to use TikTok's algorithm to get to our teenagers, our children, or just normal American voters, and get them to do what they would prefer for them to do. And they may not even realize it's happening as it's happening, right? You know, this algorithm is incredibly strong, and it can figure out people's, you know, kind of wants and needs and what they think about and stuff with, you know, in some cases it's been reported by the Wall Street Journal within 40 minutes. You know, just 40 minutes of use of the app is enough for it to start learning how to take advantage of you and your thoughts. So people need to realize, you know, what's going on here. I've been heartened to see that this went, you know, has at least made it through the committee 50-0, but there's a lot of backlash coming from some people on the far left. And I've also seen some people on the right too, that have been coming out against this for free speech reasons or trying to reach out to voters, whichever one it is. I hope they come around to this because this is a national security threat, and it might be only a matter of time before it gets worse for us.
The free speech argument, Jeremy, doesn't hold water with me. Because changing ownership of this app or banning this app does not prevent people from going to any other app, Instagram, X, any Facebook, whatever, and expressing themselves. So it seems to me if you can have access to one app, you can have access to the others as well. So I don't understand the free speech argument here, particularly when speech is being manipulated by ByteDance and by the CCP, ostensibly. So how do they make a free speech argument here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're spot on, Michelle. I mean, I don't understand how you could make this a free speech issue. There is no free speech on an app run by the Chinese Communist Party. Okay, so what this legislation is trying to do is to force them to say, look, you can keep TikTok can continue to flourish, but there's one thing you got to do. You have to divorce yourself from the Chinese Communist Party. You can sell to an American company. You can sell to literally any outside of China. I mean, the legislation is very focused, and it's very specific to to that issue. And so that's the number one thing we have to remember here. And also, too, another concern is this is the information issue. I mean, young people, TikTok is by far the dominant news outlet for young people. I mean, that's where they're getting all their news about the world and how they see things. We already saw after the attacks, the Hamas's attacks on Israel, we already saw it right in those weeks following that, how TikTok was manipulating their algorithms to make sure that our young people were being fed pro-Hamas propaganda. I mean, so this is a serious issue on a lot of different levels, not to mention the fact that so many of our kids are totally addicted to this app. I mean, it's just so many different dimensions that we're seeing here. Unfortunately, it's bad on every single level.
Michelle, if I could say one thing too, one thing that I've been concerned about as well here is the response from the Biden administration to TikTok in general. One of the things that's really concerned me is, you know, the president has his FBI director, the head of his cybersecurity, you know, nodes within the government going into Congress and telling them, you know, they're raising the red alarm every time they go in there. And these are folks that Biden put into positions in his government that are coming out against this. And then the president himself signed an executive order that extended an election emergency a warning about manipulation on social media and concerns about foreign influence just in September. He just signed that recently through the end of 2024. But then just a month ago, you know, not long after, you know, they had the hearings on TikTok again just recently, the president's campaign came out and encouraged people to follow them on TikTok. They created a TikTok page.
That's right.
And then were telling Americans they should go on there to follow him. And so that is just one thing I wanted to say real quick that I'm concerned about is that, you know, if the president is actually serious about this stuff, then, you know, he needs to get his entire administration and his campaign, for that matter, on the same page with one another and make sure they're not baiting Americans into getting on this app that they literally banned from the phones of the U.S. government. It's just it's shocking to me they're doing that. And I hope that they pull back from that, you know, soon and recant on it.
I'm not holding my breath on that one, I'll be honest. Last thing I want to get into with you guys is this reduction in troops that we're seeing. Now, I've been reading about it, and I know you guys know way more than I do about all the specifics here. So, Jeremy, let's start with you. This percentage of troops, this reduction in the force size, they're trying to sell it as, well, we're just not going to fill some spots that, you know, that are currently empty. And this is to make us more effective, more nimble. What is really going on here?
Yeah, I mean, well, as you said, I mean, a lot of it, what we're seeing right now is kind of the way they're trying to spin it is to say, well, you know, these are empty spots and they're really or spots mostly designed for the war on terrorism, the kind of counterterrorism operations that we're doing. And so since we're shifting more to a kind of conventional threat and looking at, you know, pacing threats like China and Russia, you know, we need a different type of force. And while that might be true, we know that's not the whole story. The real story is that the military has been suffering from a serious once in a generation recruitment crisis. They don't have many. They don't have enough people literally, you know, volunteering to serve in the military. And there's a lot of reasons we could have a whole podcast on why I think that is that the United States military is lacking in bringing in new soldiers.
Would you do me a favor and give me like your three top reasons though, Jeremy? If you could just hammer out a couple.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to go back to 2021 when President Biden took office. His Secretary of Defense said the number one issue that we need to handle and that we need to get a hold of the United States military is white supremacy. That's the number one threat. It's not China, not Russia, not anything else. And they went on this witch hunt. And Jimmy's done a lot of research into this as well. This witch hunt for white supremacists in the military. And basically what it really means is people who think differently than how we want you to think. And of course, that came back with not much at all, and it wastes a lot of money, time, and everything else. Even the broader issue, you know, the military sadly has just become. You see this kind of over politicization, and a lot of families don't want to send their loved ones into an institution that is seemingly to be more politically motivated than anything else. I mean, you have Secretary of Defense after Roe v. Wade was overturned. You know, he sends out, and this has never been done before, for the Secretary of Defense to send out this, you know, this memo giving his issues, you know, I'm very concerned about the Supreme Court doing this, and we are now going to fund abortions for soldiers. I mean, you see a lot of unprecedented kind of politicization of the military. This idea that we're going to start looking, not everyone wears the same, you know, I was in the Army, everyone wore the same green. Oh no, now we actually see color, and now we need to talk about race every day. I mean, so those are some of the issues that I think, what kind of exacerbates this whole issue is the funding problem, is that we have to continue to put pressure on Congress to fund our military. Right now, the increase in military funding is very small, and it does not keep up with inflation. So it is effectively a cut. And when you look at what China's doing, well, they're investing in hard power at an alarming rate, far more than we are investing in our military. And that's going to be a problem with. They are our number one threat. We are in a new type of Cold War, and we're not keeping up.
Jimmy, I get dispirited and disheartened, and I have to try to check myself because I want to remain optimistic. I want to remain hopeful. I want to look at the upside, the good side. But this really is concerning to me. It's the attitude, and it's the change in tenor and tone of what the armed services is all about. The last time you guys were with me, we looked at this video about misgendering people within, you know, the armed services, and it was mind-boggling that any resources at all would be put towards something that is, it seems to me, so on the fringes. And so I don't. The seeds of this had to have been planted long before 2021, right? And they're just now kind of coming to bloom, or do I have that wrong?
So, I think that there was a lot of push, particularly in the early 2010s by the Obama administration, to start trying to bring some of this politicalization and, you know, DEI initiatives into the military. And you started to see some of that happening around that point in time. The problem was that they, you know, obviously when President Trump became president, he put a stop to a lot of the more fringe issues that were going on there. You know, obviously we want a military that is diverse and that, you know, can work together on the same team, moving towards the same goal and celebrate, you know, being Americans and working to defend American values, which should be the identity that we uphold over everything else. But there is a point where you can take this so far, particularly when you start adopting these sort of, you know, Ivy League kind of ideologies and then putting people in political positions in DOD to start pushing this down on the troops. And that was essentially what the Biden administration did in 2021. They started taking a lot of these political operatives who, you know, took advantage, frankly, of the, you know, the tragedy that happened around George Floyd's murder. And went on, you know, to go in the military and kind of take that zeitgeist in that moment in American history and use it as a bludgeon on troops, you know, and not just on the troops themselves, but also their families, frankly. I mean, DOD schools have been, you know, pushing some of these ideologies on kids. And you know, fortunately, there's been a lot of people in Congress that have been, you know, pushing back and questioning this. From the DOD education administrator. But, you know, you're right. I think it did sort of start in the early 2010s. And I think I saw a little bit of that myself at that point in time. But I really think it got supercharged, you know, following the COVID era and, yeah, you know, some of the stuff around the DEI initiatives that came out of that. And so, unfortunately, you know, that's coming to fruition now. And my hope is that, you know, a lot of the pushback that we're seeing, I think there really has started to be a reversal on some of this stuff now. I think DOD's seen that, you know, they may have went a little too far on some initiatives and starting to draw back. yeah, just a little bit. I think it's starting to sort of draw back a little bit now. And I hope that pendulum continues to swing back towards the middle because, you know, nobody, you know, I'm personally conservative, but, you know, I don't want the military politicized. I don't want it to be, you know, one way or the other. I want it to be in the middle, apolitical, focused on, you know, fighting and winning our nation's wars, which unfortunately, you know, we haven't been too focused on in the last couple of years.
Well, Jeremy, you know, my background's in sports and in sport in every level, except maybe youth, but let's say college and pro, the way you earn a spot on a roster is by working really hard and by being better than everyone else. There's competition, yeah. There's merit base to, you know, you don't become Tom Brady without a lot of work. And you don't replace Tom Brady with a guy who's maybe checks some ideological boxes, but can't play the role, right? So why isn't that still being applied to the military?
Yeah, I mean, it's scary to think. I mean, when you start cherry picking people based on the color of their skin, based on immutable characteristics, not only do you degrade the institution itself, but you also destroy trust between teams. I mean, you start to see each other not as our fellow teammates, but as you know, someone that, of a different race, of a different whatever, and you start to kind of degrade what it means to come together to fight and win our nation's wars, as we said, which is the mission of the military. And it also, even for the person, I mean, I can't tell you how degrading it would be to say, okay, oh, we're going to get this job because because you're black. I mean, it's offensive. So it's even offensive to the people in which, you know, the program is directed. So, you know, it's one of those things that we have to continue to speak up. We have to continue to have, you know, programs like yours that are shining a light on this stuff, that is talking truth. That's the way we kind of fight back with a lot of these really misguided initiatives.
One thing I wanted to add to what Jeremy just said too is, you know, when you talk about this sort of divisiveness that comes out of this DEI program, the ideologies and stuff, you know, look back at what happened on college campuses in the aftermath of October 7th, right? I mean, you saw this anti-Semitic backlash that was focused specifically on this, you know, terrible, just groupthink mentality that has brought us to this point where, you know, kids can watch, you know, innocent people get murdered, you know, unfortunately on X and Twitter from these Hamas terrorists and say, you know, this is fake or this was justified because of, you know, some colonialism or whatever. Yeah. That's the type of thing that you don't want seeping into the United States military. And, you know, we unfortunately just saw an airman, you know, set himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy in D.C. a couple of days ago. And, you know, obviously, I feel terrible for his family. And it's awful that he somehow, you know, got to that point where that happened, you know, where he felt the need that, you know, settler colonialism or whatever it was bad enough that he felt he was committing genocide and then went and killed himself. Right. And set himself on fire in front of this building. That's the type of ideology that you don't want seeping into the United States military. And it's concerning that that happened there. And, you know, imagine if it got worse than that.
That is, I'm glad you brought up that story because that was a shocking tale. And I really have to believe there was more to that. There had to have been some sort of level of either mental illness or something that led this poor guy to do this. It's tragic. It's awful. Yes. Okay. I like to end my podcast by asking, because we talk about some really deep and sometimes dispiriting, depressing stuff. So this time I'll switch it. Jimmy, what gives you hope?
Well, you know, I think the one thing is that if we look back in American history, you know, we've gone through really difficult times in this country and we've gone through, you know, every time we've gone through something difficult, we've always bounced back from it, right? There's always been these competing forces that have put us in difficult situations and we've always gotten ourselves out of it. And I'm confident, you know, despite a lot of the issues, particularly surrounding the military right now, and, you know, whether it's a recruiting crisis or the health crisis that is partially feeding the recruiting crisis as well, and those types of things, Americans have always eventually rallied around what the right answer is and driven forward. Like, we've always figured it out. And things are very divisive right now. They're as divisive as I can remember it, and I think most people alive now can remember it. But, you know, I would hope, and I do have optimism here that, you know, people will realize, like, you know, this country is, in my opinion, a miracle, right? It's the greatest country in the world. And, you know, the American people will eventually rally around, you know, a leader and move forward with that leader, you know, to, you know, strengthen our citizenry, bring back that civic virtue and get people inspired to lead the country and lead this world, because that's what America's been doing for the last 70 years. And in my opinion, you know, warts and all, we've still been better at it than most other places have been. You know, I don't want to see a world where a China or a Russia are running the world stage, because they will run roughshod over everyone. And so my hope is that Americans will sort of rise up to that challenge and will really rally around the ideas and the values that we've always held and kind of push forward to strengthen our military and strengthen our country in general. So I don't think we should give up on it. This is a great country, and I would hate to see this wonderful experiment that we've been taking part in fail.
Jeremy, what makes you hopeful?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first, as a Christian, my hope is always in Christ. I mean, that's where it all stems from for me. That's what wakes up in the morning and it gives me, the joy of going throughout my day. I guess even on a more practical level, my wife and I, we often look at as we raise our two little kids, and we have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. And what gives me hope when I look at them is yes, the pressures and out in society and culture today are toxic, they're dangerous. The ideas, that are floating around, that are incredibly troubling and for a lot of parents. But what we know is that our pressure that we're applying in the home to stand up for what's right, to know, to speak truth, and to not follow the crowd, we're exacting even more pressure in our homes. And so what gives me hope is seeing my kids, their excitement to learn new things and to teach them, the right and the real story of our country. That gives me hope when I see my little girl recite the Pledge of Allegiance. It makes me very, very, very proud. So that gives me hope.
Well, you guys give me hope. I love having you on. We'll do it again because your voices are so important in this conversation, and I wish they were amplified even more. And so we try to do that because I think people need to hear this from hopeful, honest, truthful, patriotic Americans who really believe in what this country is and can still be and can grow into. So guys, thank you so much. I end every podcast with the same two phrases: be brave and do good, like these two gentlemen, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having us.
According to the United States intelligence community, domestic terrorism from white supremacists is the most lethal terrorist threat in the homeland. To that end, our administration is carrying out the first ever comprehensive effort to tackle the threat posed by domestic terrorism, including white supremacy. We're doing so by taking action to reduce online radicalism and recruitment to violence. We're also disrupting networks that inspire violence and domestic terrorists by providing resources to communities to build resilience. We cannot and must not give hate any safe harbor. Any safe harbor.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.